Hello, Worst Foot Forwardians. Before we get into the episode, we have some fun admin to be getting through. I say, sitting on a chair backwards and sounding like the coolest supply teacher in high school. First off, as ever, we got to begin with some thanks. Enormous thanks to our regular listener and Patreon donor, Andy Elms, who dropped us a message just as lockdown to the lockening hit the United Kingdom and said, I guess you guys could probably do with a bit more money, and chucked us double his previous donation. So thank you very much, Andy. You remain a gentleman and a scholar. Next up, a clarification followed by a fun Christmas offer for you all. In last week's episode, Barry pointed out that the wonderful Jacob Faber gave us our most generous donation ever. Now, when I saw the email telling us what Jacob had donated us, initially, I swallowed my tongue because I thought what he had donated was a monthly donation and I was ready to rip my shirt off and run naked up and down the street. Turns out Jacob has still been very generous, but he has taken advantage of Patreon's new feature where you can give us a one-off annual donation. So rather than giving us a wee little bit each month, you can just go, here's a lump sum, enjoy it, lads. Easier for you guys, probably, and also we get more, well, we don't get more bang for our buck, but we get the bang in one lump sum, and who doesn't like getting banged in one lump sum? Which brings me to my point. Jacob very kindly chucked us $50 for keeping him company during his PhD studying. So with Christmas on the horizon and with it being difficult to get to shops, we thought we would make you an offer. We have in the past, for winner of a competition we did, done a private bespoke episode for our listener Charlie, where she told us a bit about herself, her husband, their surnames, their background, their jobs, their passions, and we made a 20-25 minute episode all inspired by that. If you donate via an annual membership, $50 or higher, we will do that for you. So basically, if you chuck us that, and it's up to you. You can chuck it to us just as a one-off or make it a yearly donation. But nevertheless, we will consider it a $50 down payment for me and Barry to go away, do some research and give you your own private episode as a bit of a different alternative gift. If you want to do that, you can head to patreon.com/worstfootforward and we will get cracking. I have no idea if any of you are going to take us up on it, but don't take our word for it. Listen to what Charlie thought.
Hi guys, Charlie here. I won the Worst Foot Forward scavenger hunt and got a episode all about me and my family. I gave Ben and Barry the names of our family, me and my husband's birth year, and the name of our hometown. And in return, we got an interesting, clever, and very funny bespoke Worst Foot Forward episode all about us. In true Worst Foot Forward manner, Ben and Barry did great research that they put their own personal spin on. We found out that we got ties to Vermont through our hometown, and apparently we'll be all right in case of Ragnarök, the world's end. Since we named our sons the leader of the universe and quiet God who will avenge his father's death. This will absolutely be the best gift this holiday season.
Meanwhile, I've also got a little bit of self-promotion to do. Back at the start of the year, you may well have heard me talk about my show Fable Maker, which I was bringing on tour for the first time. Now, obviously, I don't know if you know, there's been a bit of a hullabaloo with a gentleman who enjoyed a rather wild bat and pangolin curry that's rather put pay to a lot of the fun we were intending to have this year. However, Fable Maker has just dropped on nextupcomedy.com, which is essentially British stand-up comedy's version of Netflix. And I would very much like you all to see the show and see what you think, and also to become members of Next Up Comedy, partially because it's a cheap and effective way to bring 200 plus hours of outstanding stand-up comedy into your living room, which you might not normally see on the shiny floor shows. And also because, once again, I get a cheeky bit of income, which is pretty thin on the ground right now. What you can do is you can click to join Next Up Comedy using the link that is in the show notes. That'll give you a 7-day free trial. And then after that, if you put the code FABLEMAKER in when prompted, that'll give you a further 30% discount for the year. And you'll be unsurprised to know, if you pledge to become a member of Next Up yearly rather than monthly, well, the baby Vandervelds shall eat better this Christmas. to give it you the more positive sell rather than the Bob Cratchit sell, there are some of the most astonishing stand-up comedians you're likely to see on there. If you want to see stuff that is alternative, underground, lo-fi, plus some pretty famous names, I genuinely hugely recommend Next Up Comedy. They are doing the very best to support grassroots talent in a really innovative, creative, kind and fair way. My show, as I'm sure you'll know from previous witterings on from me, is a completely improvised stand-up show where I create a brand new story every time based on the audience in front of me. Have a cheeky little watch. It is quite fun and I'm still really proud of it. I think you'll really enjoy it. As ever, we're delighted to hear you guys get in touch with us. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm on at Ben Vanderveld on Twitter. He's on at Baz McStay. We're on at Worst Foot. And you can email us at worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we're going to do a best of the worst episode, which is where we go back to a previous bunch of episodes and pick the best of a thing rather than the worst of a thing, because don't know about you, we've had quite a stressful week mainlining Sugar and CNN, and then after that we could have some really cool ones coming up. I have taken advantage of the fact that we're in lockdown too to ask some pretty big names who may not normally be up for a podcast like this, but probably, frankly, don't have anything better else on. So now is a really good time if you have connections to or just have a massive wish list of someone who you'd love to hear on the podcast. Get in touch, because I'm going to be emailing them going, the world is still pretty much on hold until the spring. Come and chat to us for an hour and a half. That is, I think, my friends, the top and tail of it all. Do enjoy this week's podcast, which is full of all sorts of daftness, and stick around for the end with possibly the silliest best news of the week we've ever done. Sit back, enjoy the world's worst old wives' tales. Hello, friends, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find me sat in the waiting room of a craniofacial surgeon, as it turns out that if you pull a face and the wind changes, you're stuck with it forever. Long story short, I looked at the results of the election last week, felt the winds of change blowing around me, and now I need a Harley Street consultant to do his best with a blowtorch and a crowbar. And yes, listeners, you might think, that's a very ambiguous response to the results of the American election on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'll tell you why, kids, because this podcast is being recorded on the 30th of October, and so I've decided to leave it open-ended on whether the world has ended or the future of the free world is in the hands of a doddery, well-meaning neoliberal. Fingers crossed, guys. Let's hope he's hit the reset button. And with me is a man who is the wizened old crone to my own smooth font of truth, Barry McStay.
Oh, isn't the world such a better place? Slash, oh, isn't the world worse than we thought? Delete as applicable.
Slash, oh my word, isn't it a draw and it's going to the Supreme Court? I'm sure that's going to go well.
To be fair, at the point... What'll it be? Tuesday, Wednesday? They may still not have a clear result by the time this episode goes out on the following Monday. So let's put in a third. Ooh, could go either way still, couldn't it?
Let's be positive. I hope it's an absolute chaos result. Who'd have thought that Texas would be blue and California would go red? I mean...
And Kanye won after all. Wow. Yeah.
And he's picked that hologram of his father-in-law to be his vice president.
Do you know what? I'm gonna steadfastly pretend Joe Biden has won the election throughout this podcast recording, and just, you know, it'll be really nice. Just even because the next one we record, it'll have happened and we'll know the result, and we may never get the chance again. So I'm really excited to see the first female vice president. Aren't you, Ben?
I'm really excited to see that, Barry. I'm really excited, but worried that we'll be opening the next show with going, that civil war escalated quickly, didn't it? Who'd have thought they'd nuke Idaho? Didn't see that in Biden's wheelhouse, but there we are.
2020, you card.
Yeah.
Our guest this week is a comedian with over 15 years of experience in stand-up comedy, performing and emceeing in the UK, as well as across Europe, Australia and the USA. As a writer, she has written for BBC Radio 4 comedy flagships The News Quiz and The Now Show, as well as for Sarah Millican and 8 out of 10 Cats, the TV show. She's not literally scripted the meows of 80% of all domestic felines. In fact, she's much better known for her work alongside a dog, her rescue dog, Homer, who has been the inspiration for and co-star of two of her most recent stand-up shows, This Flipping Rescue Dog Has Ruined My Life and Year of the Dog. According to our guest, he mostly meets and greets people as they come in, shaking their hands and checking bags for food. During the show itself, he has a few things to do, one of which, he believes, is to upstage me and clean his willy, just as I'm about to say a punchline. That sounds exactly like the time I... Ben, stop that! Stop it immediately! Just before my punchline as well. Come on, Ben. Anyway, sadly, Homer wasn't available for the podcast. We couldn't afford his doggy treats rider. So instead, we'll just have to settle for his lovable human, Juliette Myers.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. What a lovely introduction. So massively well researched. I particularly love that because I did a show about a year ago and someone introduced me as saying that I'd written for 9 out of 10 Cats.
that's the one you watch on Channel 4 Plus 1, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, you're very right about Homer having more of a career than me.
Yeah, I'm telling you why, it's good to have a double act. I've learned that. And if you can make one half of it quite furry and lovable, then even better.
Oh, absolutely. People know his name and not mine, which is a bit annoying, but fine if it gets us places.
Yeah. Did you intend to bring him to shows, or is it just that he doesn't like being on his own?
No, that's exactly what happened. That I wanted a dog for ages, and then he howls if he's left by himself.
Oh.
And everyone suggested all these things, like, oh, let him listen to the radio. It turns out he hates radio. And there's even a thing you can get called dog TV that I thought about getting, which seems to be, I don't know, kind of more 3D version that dogs are supposed to watch, but nothing worked. There's a plug-in that's supposed to give off female doggy pheromones. Nothing worked.
It makes sense, though. There is a Fox TV, so...
Yes. Yes. There is. If only that worked for dogs.
Who have been up in uproar for the last week trying to figure out who Biden will name as his Secretary of State.
Yeah. Is dog TV just like, you know, a nice lady in a barber jacket going, you're a good boy. Who's a good boy?
This is the thing. I never fully subscribed, but it seems to be quite a lot of that. I was hoping it would be exactly the same as normal TV, but with dogs in the characters. So you could have like...
dog newsreaders.
Yes, or something.
Dog countdown.
You know, yes, or that, you know, he could watch a more... I think it's a more technicolour version of normal TV. You know, I want him to be able to watch Postman Pat and go, look, there's two wankers in that car. There's a postman and a cat. This is just the most infuriating thing ever. But none of this worked. Nothing worked. And I did a gig where I had got a dog sitter and the guy said, can you go on later? And I said, I've got to get back for the dog sitter. And he said, well, next time bring the dog, I'll look after it. And I did take Homer. He introduced me because he was comparing as well. He walked past me and I tried to hand him Homer's lead and he blanked me. So I just took Homer on stage, who jumped on stage and started shaking hands with people, and the whole audience went, ah. So with me going, don't say ah, you know, I'm trying to work out how long dogs live. And suddenly this kind of, you know, I became the, you know, I became the Eric to his Ernie. No, Ernie to his Eric rather.
It does buy you a few minutes of, you know, audience goodwill, I suppose.
It does. It does. I mean, I worry for the day when suddenly someone says, I'm terrified of dogs or something. But weirdly, yeah, he has been. It's weird because it's not a USP I ever imagined having. And there are lots of other comedians with dogs now. But, you know, he does participate quite a lot in the show.
That's great, but also if someone ever heckles you, can you not be like, listen, he may look placid, but I've got a trigger word.
Yeah. That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah. I mean, like I
Dog Savage's audience member.
3 stars.
Yeah.
I've got Heckle. I did write Heckle put downs for him when I did a show with him, but I always forgot to do them. I can't remember what they were now. I think one of them was your mum's only got 2 tits or something.
Sorry, was that heckle put downs for if Homer starts heckling you during the show?
Or just a person, but yes, I suppose you could heckle me.
I'm supposed to be the son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yes.
Thing is, if anyone started getting up here, I go, listen, you've got 2 options. You've either got jokes from me or this little fucker performs the Iliad, and it might take a while.
That'd be brilliant. Do you know, I'd love to do that. I might try and do that, like Homer does the Iliad. I've just bought him a piano, actually, so...
Because you're living the life of Tom Hanks in the film Big?
Yes. It's only a little... It cost £5 on Amazon. It's not like a big piano, but I did think maybe, you know, maybe if there's a lull in the show, if he can play a piano for a bit, but
yeah.
No.
Little interlude.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I can tell that it's gone suspiciously quiet now that you're both going, okay, too far.
Sit, stay.
Sit, yeah. Oh, yeah, oh, I mean the ultimate heckle for you is go, play dead.
Yes.
Now, listen, we have learned that you are outstanding at being a modern dog owner, but what is it that you are worst at in the world?
Oh, hands down, dancing. I really can't dance. I mean, to the point of... Because part of me thinks, what does it matter in this day and age? You know, we're not living in some kind of musical or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not in West Side Story or anything. But I somehow just... I can't... If I go to weddings or even a couple of months ago, I suppose, pre-lockdown, I went out and there was some music on and we're all dancing. And suddenly one of my friends went, you really have no rhythm. And it's quite embarrassing to... It's weird, but I just can't dance at all. I went on holiday to Brazil a few years ago and I stayed with my Brazilian friends and they kept saying that the highlight of the stay with them was that we were going to go to like this village square and do a dance. And I was like, surely this is a joke. Surely this is like my worst nightmare. And Brazilians very big on all kind of, you know, salsa. And we went to this thing called a forró, which is supposed to be the easiest Brazilian dance. And there was a lot of guys in the square who looked like they were quite pissed or possibly homeless. And suddenly when the music started, they all got up and danced beautifully on kind of... And one of them tried to grab me and dance with me. And I humoured him. Then after a bit, he went, no, no, no. Bad.
Oh, no.
And I had to pretend I was drunk. But it was just that, you know, this overweight, pot-bellied, slightly, you know, knackered-looking guy could dance far better than me.
Oh, wow. Surely at least with like organized dances, say the YMCA, you couldn't be any worse than Donald Trump is with the YMCA, or was now
yes.
Ex-president Donald Trump was with the YMCA.
Yes, exactly.
I for one, by the way, cannot wait to see Joe Biden's Oh Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Pizza Hut.
But you see, even Donald Trump's terrible YMCA... No, it is bad, actually. No,
yeah.
Screw it.
Yeah, that was bad.
I didn't think Theresa May was as bad as people...
No,
thought.
At least she threw herself into it.
Yeah, I mean, it had a real sort of I've got no strings quality to it.
Yeah. I felt like I was watching her at like 1 frame per second.
Oh, yeah, it was very much a Ray Harryhausen production, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's essentially what Theresa May is. It's just one of the skeletons from Jason and the Argonauts with a demented Rotarian poured on top of that. And if you want to know more about Jason and the Argonauts, just ask Juliet's dog.
Yeah. I did read about the magpies because my mum does it as well. She salutes magpies. She says, "Hello, Mr. Magpie. How's Mrs. Magpie? I hope she's very well." That's her version. I think there's various different versions of the rhyme. There's, "Hello, Mr. Magpie. How's your family? Lift up your tail and bring good luck to me." For people who don't know this, I don't know if this is just a British Isles thing as well. There is a song or a rhyme, which is one for if you, about magpies. One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, four for a boy, five for silver, six for gold, seven for a secret never to be told, eight for a wish, nine for a kiss, 10 for a bird you must not miss, apparently. So if you see one magpie, it's a cause of sorrow, which is why you should. And magpies also mate for life. So if you see a magpie on its own, that's why it's a sorrowful thing, because it's lost its partner. So that's why you salute it, assuming it's got a partner somewhere else, because that's to...
Like penguins. I like the thought that all black and white animals mate for life.
Yeah, that'd be... Pandas don't mate at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, no, they're just in a sexless marriage.
Yeah.
Yes. Or maybe you just have to say to them, "Where's your wife?" And then they'll be like, oh, Christ, I left her in...
That's the thing that bugs me, though. When you see, like, two or three magpies, you go, "I'm safe." But what's to say they're not three single magpies? And you've got to salute each of them individually.
That's even more terrifying.
Yeah.
They're three single magpies in a really awkward... It's like three single magpies in a lift that is like, "Oh, I've turned you two down."
Yeah. Magpies are really intelligent, by the way. Their brain to body mass ratio is only bettered by humans. And it's the same as that as aquatic mammals and great apes. So they're one of the most intelligent creatures on the planet. They use tools. They can imitate human speech. They grieve. When one of their group dies, they'll form they'll have a little funeral around the body of sort of squawking and crying. And to portion out food for the young, they'll make utensils in order to be able to cut the meals up into proper sizes and things like that. And they can pass the mirror test, which proves an animal's ability to recognize itself in the mirror. You put a dot on them. Or in a place that they can only see by looking into a mirror. So if they can recognize it's themselves, then that's the indication of how intelligent they are. Chimps, bonobos, orangutans, bottlenose dolphins, killer whales, elephants, probably pigeons, and some fish can do it, and magpies as well, and some humans.
That's amazing. Another thing about tools, but I mean. That's incredible.
That's why we salute magpies when they're on their own, because it's like, good, stay separate, because if they're together, then they're plotting.
Yeah, it's a gang. I also read then about another bird that people have a lot of superstitions about, robins. There's a few different superstitions about robins in Ireland. If you kill a robin, it'll bring you a life of misery. If a robin comes into your house, it means death is approaching. Or it means someone is...
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, or it can mean that someone is pregnant near you as well.
Hang on, there's a lot to unpack. Merry Christmas, death is upon us, but also congratulations, a baby.
Yeah, I guess it's a one-in, one-out system with the robin. But the robin is associated with Jesus. Apparently when Christ was dying on Good Friday, the story goes that a robin attempted to pull the crown of thorns from his head, but failed. And obviously it left its own body stained with the blood of Christ, which is what the red breast is. And so it has associations with, obviously, if you kill a robin, then it's a sign of bad luck. And it can bring certain portents and things like that because of its association with Christ.
That's amazing. Can I just, I don't know if you read this. I had heard about the magpie thing, but the reason why magpies are seen as unlucky, if you see one, well, maybe they should all be unlucky. I read that Christians used to see magpies as unlucky because they're not fully in mourning after the crucifixion, because they've got a little bit of white on them.
Yeah, that's so they've not properly engaged. They're not reverent enough.
Yes.
That's cool. I like that.
Which is quite cool, isn't it? So I guess crows are okay then.
Yes.
But I also think with that, you know, why don't Christians go, "Oh my God, we've seen a peacock. That's absolutely outrageous."
Yeah, I just like the fact of like a peacock strutting past a church in the past to be like, "Have some respect."
Yeah. I read some more of these Irish old wives' tales. Apparently, spiders hate conkers. There's an old wives' tale that if you've got spiders in your house, you should scatter some chestnuts around the house to tear them. Some vets then counsel that you should obviously check what pets you might have in the house, because some pets might find conkers poisonous. And if you leave them just scattered around the floor of your house, it might cause some damage. Also, I don't, this maybe isn't just an Irish thing, but did you ever, and I certainly had this, when you went like away on holiday or anything, like you'd have to turn off the sockets or unplug stuff in the house?
Yeah. Oh no, that my wife still does that.
Yeah, everything in that. You just go, oh, it could, like, the whole house could burn down if we don't unplug the television.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that seems quite a modern old wives' tale.
It's mad, isn't it? It is mad. Like, in case there was a surge of power or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to make any real sense. Maybe it makes more sense than these ones all to do with itchiness. If your nose is itchy, you're having a fight, apparently. I hope that's like, I mean, if your nose is bleeding, you're probably having a fight. I don't know. If your right hand is itchy, you're going to meet someone new. If your left hand is itchy, you're going to get money. And if your foot is itchy, you're going to go somewhere new. But then again, that's just like, you've got pins and needles. You're obviously going to have to get up and walk around to like get the blood flowing again. So I feel like that's back-splaining why we walk around once we've got pins and needles. But then I read about some old wives' tales that are true. These things that people say that have actually got some base of fact in them. There's an old wives' tale about there's loads about childbirth, as I'm sure you two came across in your research. There's a thing about whether you can predict if a baby is a boy or a girl by how long the pregnancy is or how long the labour is. And there is a story that says if there's a long labour, it's going to be a boy. And according to a survey in the Mater Hospital in Dublin, this is true. They studied over 8,000 births and found a direct correlation between baby gender and the length of the labour. And one reason they suggest is that baby boys often have larger heads than girls, which means they might need a bit more help during labour. So there is some truth to the rumour a longer labour means boys. University of California did a study in 2007 to survey men who spent 30 minutes or more in hot water per week and found that the idea that hot water kills your sperm is almost certainly true. That they found their fertility levels were really low, and then they got them to give up using hot water for baths or whatever, and their sperm production rocketed up 461% after 3 to 6 months.
So what you're saying is, in the same way that professional sports people have ice baths to improve performance, that if you desperately want to conceive, you should be heading into the freezer. No wonder Boris Johnson was hiding in a fridge towards the end of the last election campaign, and he was like, I'm going to be siring some more children soon, better give the old Johnson worms a bit of a kick.
Oh God, don't ever call them that again.
I'm so sorry.
There's also an old wives' tale that says fish are good for the brain. They're like brain food. That's definitely true. Omega-3s and fatty acids and things are meant to improve the conductivity between brain cells. And there is an idea that if a woman is pregnant and has heartburn, she's more likely to give birth to a hairy baby. I don't know if your wife ever had heartburn during...
Sylv did have heartburn more the first time, as I remember, and our son came out with, like, full head of hair, obvs, but also hairy shoulders as well.
Well, according to a study at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, they actually set out to disprove this theory in a study and instead came out going, oh, no, actually, you know what? It's true. Heartburn and hairiness might be linked, they think, by the fact that higher levels of hormones during pregnancy can relax the esophagus muscles, which cause gastric reflux and heartburn, but also the higher hormones can promote hair growth as well. So there may be a reason for the two things to be linked. I've read one more before my choice. And you know the idea of salt, spilling salt being bad luck, and what should you do with it?
Yeah.
You throw it over your... Apparently you should throw it over your left shoulder, because that's where the devil is on the sinister side. So you would be throwing salt in his eyes, apparently, to blind him before he can attack you. There is an alternative thing you should do if you spill salt. Instead of throwing some of it over your shoulder, you should cry and use enough tears to dissolve all the spilled salt. That's a lot, though, if it's an entire salt cellar. I don't know anyone who'd be sad enough over it. You cry over spilled milk. Crying over salt, not so much.
That's a lot. I mean, you've got to be able to cry on demand, and I've never been able to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Both biblical and pagan traditions, a long time ago, salt has considered really important for sacrifices. It had purifying ideas because it was used to preserve meats instead of refrigerators. It was really valuable and important. So spilling it would be considered bad luck, because it was a part of the sacrificial rites and also a really valuable thing. So it was, you know, a sign of bad luck if you spilt any. But it's depicted, there is a salt cellar spilt with salt over the table in Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper. And do you know who's sitting beside it?
Is it old Judas?
It's Judas. It's in front of Judas. He's got the bag of money in his hand, and there's a spilt salt cellar in front of him as well. Now, there are some people on the internet who go, this is where the superstition comes from. It's not. It's a much older superstition than that, but it's one of the more famous examples of it being depicted. But I've gone for one of the more famous old wives' tales, which is that eating your carrots is good for your eyesight.
Great.
Now, that's pretty... Again, this is one of those that is pretty true. They have a lot of vitamin A in it, in the form of beta carotene, and so that's good for your eyes. And in 1998, again, John Hopkins' study said that supplemental pills can reverse poor vision among those with a vitamin A deficiency.
What is going on at John Hopkins University that they've got enough time to waste on all of these various trivial studies?
Yeah, they've got a lot of old wives studying for PhDs, presumably. But
you'll be getting an angry letter from the faculty after that.
But do you know the most famous myth, if you like, or story about carrots and eyesight?
They have seen the dark.
Yeah,
they give you night sight. Do you know where that comes from? And where the myth was propagated a bit?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, so the story that goes around on the internet and people think they know is that, oh, Britain had developed radar, which they had, and that was how they were able to, you know, track down a lot of the Germans during the raids in the Blitz. But they wanted to keep it quiet, so they put out a story to the Germans saying that, no, the British pilots are eating lots of carrots and it's helping their night sight. And that's how they're seeing in the dark, to try and dispel the idea of that they'd invented a technology. Now, it is not necessarily true that carrots can make you see in the dark. They can cure night blindness, which is a disorder that makes it harder to see in low light. But it doesn't just make you able to see in the dark, for sure. Nevertheless, there were stories of John Cunningham, Cat's Eyes Cunningham, who was one of the first RAF fighters to shoot down an enemy plane using radar. He had a total of 20 kills, 19 of them at night, flying his plane. And they put out, you know, stories about how he's, you know, eats his carrots, and they even reached America. He had, like, matinee idol good looks, and it was all down to eating all of his carrots. And they put out all these adverts appeared. Even in America, they had adverts saying, eat carrots and leafy green and yellow vegetables, rich in vitamin A, essential for night sight. And in the UK as well, they were pushing this idea that all the RAF aces were made successful because of their carrot intake. And I was reading some outtakes from a guy who was written a book called How Carrots Helped Win World War II. And there are apocryphal tales that the Germans also started feeding their old pilots carrots, as if they thought there was some truth. Now, the thing about this story is it seems great that we lied to the Germans and made them think our radar didn't exist. The Germans almost certainly did not fall for the idea that the RAF were shooting them down thanks to carrots. And in fact, it probably isn't an anti-German tactic, the whole, you know, brouhaha the British made about the carrots. What it actually was is they were having shortages of green vegetables like sprouts and cabbage and things like that. And so they made a huge effort to encourage people to use carrots in the absence of those vegetables and in the absence of sugar. So they were promoted as a sweetener instead of sugar because of sugar was rationed. They had leaflets advertising recipes for carrot pudding, carrot cake, carrot marmalade, carrot flan, drinks like Carolade instead of lemonade. Wow. They created a character called Dr. Carrot, the children's best friend.
Of course they did.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I love how the writing of that is 101.
It's really Route 1. Not only that, they get in a Disney cartoonist called Hank Porter, who designed a whole carrot family to go with Dr. Carrot, called Carroty George, Pop Carrot and Clara Carrot, for the British to promote to the public. Lord Walton, who was the Minister of Food, he was known to say, a carrot a day keeps the blackout at bay. And he was trying to, you know, like I say, wean the British away from other vegetables and really pushing the idea of carrots and all these adverts around, you know, being able to see in the dark, and how the fighter pilots were using it, and how it was useful for you to eat carrots and drink carrots instead of anything else. The New York Times said, to hear him talk, they contain enough vitamin A to make moles see in a coal mine. And so the reason I'm picking this, the Wordsworth's old wives' tale, is that, yeah, they're good for your eyesight in a certain way. They're not good for the eyesight in the way that people say they are. And the story around why we think this is a British government propaganda push to make British people eat carrots rather than to make Germans think that they don't have radar.
I also wonder why we just stuck at just carrots. Why couldn't it be that, you know, eating turnips gives you X-ray vision? Eating cabbages makes you invisible?
Yeah, they could have gone the whole way. Yeah, absolutely. They didn't push the idea far enough. So yes, my world's worst old wives' tale is that carrots help you see in the dark.
I've got that eating your crusts gives you curly hair.
Yeah.
Just now, because as a curly haired person, and I believe I'm talking to two other curly haired people here.
Yes.
It's just so bizarre that I grew up with people saying to me, oh, eat your crusts because it'll make your hair curl. And it's like, have you been eating your carrots to see my hair? It's already curly. And to me, it's the most rubbish old wives' tale, just because it's, well, just because obviously it's so not true. It's not got any gravitas at all, because obviously curly hair is caused by genetics. I had to actually look up what exactly it's what is it? It's like a curved follicle or something. Mm. So it's almost like taking stuff creased out of a suitcase or something, that it just stays curly forever. So the idea that, like, you'd eat, it seems such a lame thing to say to kids, eat your crusts and you'll get curly hair, because also when I was growing up, curly hair wasn't a thing that people particularly wanted.
Well, do you think that's being, because it makes you look a bit foreign, and probably when we were growing up, a bit Irish as well?
Yes, awesome.
No, like, not having a go, Barry, but, you know, when we were growing up in the 80s, like, you were on the away team.
Yeah, that's very true. We still are, just to be very clear.
Yeah, mate, in terms of prejudice in the year 2020, get to the back of the queue, mate.
Calling us the home team still has certain connotations.
Yes, that's... Okay, I could have chosen a better analogy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just seems the most ridiculous thing. I mean, I tried to look up if there was any truth in it at all. And it seems to be that maybe crusts do have a concentration of antioxidants that might be quite good for you. And I guess, you know, if people were starving, saying to kids, eat more of this because you don't want to be hungry. But to me, it just seems really, why not say something like, eat your crusts, or I don't know, something really scary, like, you know, or the dog will eat you or something. I don't know. It's a lame old wives' tale, really.
Yeah.
A variation of it, when I was growing up, I don't know if you remember, there was a sweet corn advert for Green Giant where they'd say it was like two little kids and they were eating sweet corn off their plate, but they weren't particularly interested in it. And the mum went, oh, if you eat your sweet corn, you'll look like this. And she shows them the label with a massive Green Giant on it. And they go, oh, wow. And they really down the sweet corn. So
why would you want to look like that?
I guess.
That's an odd marketing ruse.
It's a very odd thing, isn't it? It's a very odd thing. But I guess at least because they're like little kids, they want to be kind of big and strong. Whereas, you know, oh, eat your crusts because... It's weird, although, you know, I guess encouraging bread, because the Spanish, when I lived in Spain, I found that there were so many phrases about people being good looking or amazing, and it was all based around bread. So I guess that's where it comes from. But I'm nominating it as the worst ever old wives' tale, because it's just got no truth.
Yeah, I read that probably came from a European tradition or an idea where having curly hair and thick hair was showed that you could eat well and you were healthy.
Yes.
And so if you were malnourished, then you would lose your hair, or your hair would be a bit lank and not so curly and not so shiny. So it probably is linked to that. And yeah, you're right about the antioxidants. Apparently, that the crust has. There was a research done in Germany in 2002. Crust has 8 times more cancer-fighting antioxidants than the centre of a loaf of bread, apparently. So
I mean, is that feels like a Daily Express headline right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, probably 2 years later, they went, crust of bread gives you cancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be like drinking glasses of red wine. I never know which is it good for you or bad for you from year to year.
No, you have to drink it, swill it, and then spit it out.
Yeah.
And just to be on the safe side. Just to be on the safe side.
Did you ever get that eating your crusts would give you hair on your chest as well?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, yes.
Which wasn't necessarily an incentive.
Yes. It was a selling point.
But it always just struck me as a weird thing that people would say to me, eat your crusts. And it's like, but I've already got curly hair. Why would I? Really, but maybe they were saying, you know, but do you want some on your chest?
Well, like for the likes of you and me, it's like eating your crusts is like the curly head equivalent of going to the gym. Like this notion that's kind of like got to keep those curls in place.
Yes, yes.
When you were growing up, did your parents, I mean, I say parents, I guess your mother or your grandmother, since it is a female thing, have any old wives' tales or superstitions that they insisted upon?
They seem to have loads, but the one that seemed to constantly terrify them was the not putting the umbrella up.
Indoors?
Indoors, oh, yeah. Because, I don't know, that just seemed like... It seemed to be permanently raining when I was growing up, and just that whole thing about, oh, don't do that, don't open an umbrella in the house because it's 9 years bad luck, or is it 9 years? Or I don't know. So I think there was a bit of... If I'm honest, I can't fully remember, but my grandmother seemed riddled with with old.
Grandma was riddled with superstition. I feel like the first time anyone ever put an umbrella up indoors, it was probably in mid-Victorian times, and it was just bedlam. Like I can just imagine it being, but like someone trying to put up a deck chair and not being able to get it down again, and just kind of like, Marjorie, I can't get the umbrella down. Call the servants immediately.
I don't know, because we've all worked in theatres at various points, I'm sure. Walking under a ladder, particularly in a theatre, always seems like bad luck. People are like, oh, don't be superstitious and stuff. I walked under a ladder in a theatre and someone dropped a Parcan lamp on my head once, so I suspect that's the origin of that as a bad luck thing to do.
Well, yeah, because that to me is health and safety, I guess, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Health and safety, old wives' tales.
So in fact, associating hair with any food stuff is just automatically a turn off, really, isn't it?
Barry, you spoke a little bit about Irish old wives' tales and Irish folklore. I found something called Bubba Misers. Juliet, you are about as good a Jew as me, therefore
not terrible,
yeah. But do you know what a Bubba Miser means?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, Bubba, I guess, is like grandmother, is it?
Yeah, and...
Old Jewish lady.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's basically, it's grandma's tales rather than old wives' tales. So there's a few good ones here. It's quite good Jewish stereotype is if a grandmother doesn't like someone who wants to wish bad juju on someone, terrible choice of vocabulary, then they will do the...
A villain called Bad Juju.
Bad, yeah. It must be so difficult living in Haiti, being a pair of Jews stood next to each other. They're kind of like, oh, looks pretty good, pretty dangerous. But you know when old Jewish women do the whole peh-peh-peh-peh-peh thing, doing like the spitting thing? Yeah, so that is like apparently sometimes it's you spit away, you spit on your enemies, but also sometimes spitting on your children or grandchildren is giving them good luck. Not like hoiking, not like hoiking up a giant lung oyster. I don't quite know why that happens. But there's another fun one I found, which is that chewing upon a piece of thread whenever one's wearing a garment upon which someone is actively sewing. The practice relates to a Yiddish phrase, mir sollen nit farnaven de seichel, and that means one should not sew up the brains or sew up the common sense. So it's basically don't chew on thread because bad things can happen to you.
How do they react to that scene from Lady and the Tramp then?
Like pretty badly, but they really hate the old magician's trick of like swallowing needles and then swallowing thread.
Right. Which, as we all know, by the way, that scene is from a doggy TV made for TV movie of actually two people.
The original rom com.
Yeah.
It was Meg Ryan originally.
Yeah, exactly. It was Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks.
I'm sure Judaism isn't the only one to have superstitions about sneezes, but a Midrashic legend suggests that a sneeze is used to announce impending death. There is a story told that until the time of Jacob, a person at the close of his life sneezed and instantly died.
I think in the Christian church as well, the reason you say God bless you is that, you know, there's one theory that the, you know, your soul temporarily might leave your body, and so you're sort of making sure it goes back in. And I think also there's another suggestion that when the bubonic plague was traveling throughout Europe in the early Dark Ages, one of the symptoms was coughing and sneezing. So Pope Gregory the First suggested saying "God bless you" when a person sneezed to try and protect them in case they had the plague.
The opposite is also true in Yiddish folklore of this notion of sneezing on the truth, which is that when a person sneezes during a conversation, whatever has just been said during the sneeze will then go on to occur. So basically, I'm just going to go and get some spices from my spice cupboard. And if you could all talk about me winning the lottery, that would be very helpful.
No. But the true bit will be that you just then went to your spice cupboard.
Ah, damn.
Got to separate the two. You can't say that bit out loud, otherwise that's the true bit.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Other things that I looked at. So when I started looking up old wives, I went down a very entertaining wormhole of fish wives. Also known as fish lasses and fish fags. And these were women who sold fish. But in the 18th and 19th century in England and Scotland, they took on quite a celebrity in many ways. They were notoriously loud and foul-mouthed, because there is the expression to swear like a fishwife, and they became quite an iconic part of places like Billingsgate, which for non-British listeners is a very famous traditional fish market in London. And there's a couple of descriptions of them that I found. One said, the wives of Billingsgate dressed in the strong stuff of gowns and quilted petticoats. Their hair caps and bonnets were flattened into one indistinguishable mass upon their heads. They smoked small pipes of tobacco, took snuff, drank gin, and were known for their colourful language. They sound great, don't they?
Yeah.
It's basically, for Pratchett fans, of which I assume are many, it's basically Nanny Og. but they were such a key part of 18th century culture, they frequently appeared in satires, particularly cartoons, as the fearsome scourges of fops and foreigners. A chap called Isaac Cruikshank drew a cartoon described as the New Catamaran Expedition, in which a fleet of Billingsgate fishwives sail across the English Channel to terrorise the French, and in doing so shame the British Prime Minister of the time, which was Pitt the Younger, for his inaction. The most famous fishwife of all was from my part of the world, she was Dorothy Peel from South Shields, where former guest Lee Kyle is from. Both the South Shields and the Cullercoats fishwives were again painted very romantic lives. Now, Dorothy Peel was, as well as being a fishwife, she was a known smuggler and also protected local sailors from being press-ganned into the Napoleonic Wars. She was unable to prevent her husband, Cuthbert Peel, and his son from being press-ganned into the Royal Navy, so she snuck on board the ship herself and hid. And after being discovered, she was giving work as a nurse to the sick and wounded sailors, and her work and dedication was so respected that that when she came back home, she was given a pardon for what for stowing away, and she was made into a local heroine. Back in South Shields, she continued to work as a hawker of contraband goods and was well known for her colourful wit and stories. She published books of poetry and verse, particularly in praise of local Liberal MP Robert Ingham, of whom she was a strong supporter in the 1841 general election. And within about the last 20 or 30 years, there a statue was built of Dorothy Peel in South Shields.
That's cool.
So, yeah, really great, isn't it?
I like that this is so positive as well, because when people talk about old wives' tales and old wives, it always makes it sound like these are idiotic women.
Yes.
Who've got nothing to do apart from sit around with lack of education, whereas Dorothy Peel and the fishwife sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we should say as well that wife was used interchangeably with woman at a certain time, so it doesn't necessarily mean a married person at all.
Yes, yes. It's all of us.
Yeah, it's all of you. Nothing better to do than come up with silly notions like fish is good for the brain and carrots are good for your eyesight.
Yeah, well, maybe fish is good for the brain was spread by fishwives to drum up business.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
They're in the pocket of big grouper.
In the pocket of big Sprat.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you a smattering, or if you're a fishwife, a sprattering of ridiculous fishwives from around the world. So first of all, from Guyana, if a mother wears high heels during pregnancy, the baby will come out cross-eyed. I assume that she's tottering around and doesn't know where the baby's going.
That's reminded me of one that I heard once, that there's an Australian old wives' tale that if you're pregnant and you have a craving for a certain food and you don't satisfy that craving by having the food, the child will come out looking like the food in question.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. To be like, really fancy, like, I don't know.
Charcoal, lead, whatever. Yeah. What do women crave? Is it charcoal during pregnancy sometimes? Or something?
Oh, is it? Yeah, maybe. Then your child will come out dirty, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if you really want pizza, they'll come out with like acne already.
Yeah. You've got to really hope they don't want cauliflower.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that's a future scrum half right there. An Irish one. If 3 drops of water are given to a baby before he's baptised, he will answer the first 3 questions put to him. So make your own little soothsayer.
Oh, but I mean, doesn't say if they'll answer them accurately or not.
Ah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, we could all answer questions.
Yes. And a fairly brutal one from Germany, which is when you see a baby's first tooth, immediately box their ears and they'll cut the rest of their teeth quicker.
Oh.
That's brutal, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. I found some great French ones. Apparently in France, it's very important to them that for a bride on her wedding day, if a cat sneezes on them, then the marriage will be a happy one. So I can only assume that in France on a wedding day, there's just lots of desperate mothers and mothers-in-law trying to find a cat with a pollen problem.
Or with Qatar.
Yes, or with Qatar.
Do you have an applause machine? I wish someone to press it.
Another French one that I found based on bread, the baguette is very iconic in French culture. This is sort of similar, I guess, to an Asian thing of you have to place your chopsticks neatly on top of a bowl. Don't stick them in. That's bad etiquette. So with the baguette, if it is placed upside down on a table, that brings bad luck. I don't know which the right end of a baguette is, which is a real issue.
The bit with the slashes. The slashes, like the crusty slash bit should be on top as opposed to the...
I see.
Not on its tip, Ben.
That's what I meant. I was like, both tips are the same. And also, how do you balance?
Yeah, if you can place a baguette on one end on your table, then not only is it cursed, but you're a witch.
I thought you were going to say you are then the future king of France.
Yeah.
But it's related to, apparently, executioners. The baker would reserve a baguette for the executioner because they were a very feared person within the community. And they would do it by placing it upside down to make sure no one else would take it, because no one would be foolish enough to upset a hungry executioner. And that's how it developed.
Is that why sometimes in some newsagents in the UK, you go in and the newspapers are the wrong way up? They're reserving them. They're not trying to stop you reading them without buying them. They're reserving them for the local executioner.
Yep. Yeah. Before I go to my choices, I looked up someone who I don't think we've talked about on the podcast before, which is Old Mother Shipton. Do you know about her?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Nope.
So Old Mother Shipton, basically the most famous prophetess in England. Her cave is it's either an English Heritage or National Trust site in North Yorkshire. So it's only about an hour and a half away from where I live. She was born in the late 15th century in 1488, lived for about 73 years, and she predicted, in theory, many things, including the Great Fire of London, the defeat of the Spanish Armada, and also trains, iron ships, submarines, aircraft, telegraphy, and the end of the world. Now, obviously, how?
Time machine.
She was an old crone who managed to build a steam-powered time machine.
When did she live? If she lived during the age of submarines and telephones.
Yeah, she died in 1945. No, she lived from 1488 to 1561. Like, some of the prophecies are genuinely unnerving. So, the maiden queen, full many a year, shall England's warlike scepter bear, and the western monarch's wooden horses shall be destroyed by Drake's forces.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it's been backfitted, though.
Quite a lot of them might have been. Oh, yeah. Her attrition rate is not great. There's a book of rhyming couplets that's got about 100 of them in. And as far as I can see, about 1 out of 10 might be vaguely true.
Also, she may have been talking about a duck and got lucky with Francis Drake, sir.
She might have been. Some of the others, things like carriages without horses shall go. Iron in the water shall float as easy as a wooden boat. In the air, men shall be seen. Around the world, thoughts shall fly in the twinkling of an eye. It's the fucking internet, mate. Or she's just going, it's the 16th century. I'll do some sort of woolly mumbo jumbo and see if it impresses people.
Yeah. If she goes, emails will be a thing. That's impressive. If she goes, thoughts can fly around the world in a second. I mean, that's just how rumours and ideas spread.
But Barry, Juliet, here's the kicker. The world to an end shall come in 1881. I rest my case.
Oh, well, there you go then. Well, that's quite a relief. Before, just as you were saying the date, I was like, please don't make it be 2021.
That would be too much, wouldn't it? That
when you went, here's much. The kicker, it was like, no, this is a terrible way to break it to your listeners.
But my choice, we're going back around the world. We're going to the Dominican Republic. It is another warning to new mothers to keep a watchful eye on their newborn. And they have to keep a watchful eye to make sure that the bruja, I think it is pronounced, B-R-U-J-A, you've heard of brujas.
Well, I lived in Spain, and bruja means witch.
Ah, okay, so this is a particular kind of witch. It is a witch that turns into an owl-faced creature by removing its skin. And then in bird form, it will creep up to the newborn and suck the blood of the newborn out of its big toe.
Ooh.
Really creepy, right? It also appears in the folklore of Mexico and the Texano, who I think are Native Americans from, you'd be unsurprised to know, Texas, as the Lajutza. And that is a normal human woman who sold her soul to the devil in order to be given mystical powers and then becomes this bruja creature. And again, like the thing that's particularly creepy there is they make a noise of a human whistle or a crying infant in order to attract attention and distract parents away from the newborn's crib to then go and feast on the newborn's blood.
I mean, anyone who's held a newborn has obviously gone, well, your feet look delicious and I want to put them in my mouth.
Yeah, sure.
So I feel like that is definitely, if I was a blood-sucking witch, that is definitely the point of access I would go for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just, of all the things that I read, that just seemed absolutely spine-chilling. There's no two ways about it. Yeah, I read a little bit about Dominican witchcraft, and it's interesting because it seems to be more influenced by Spanish folklore and the native Indian folklore of that place called the Taino. Sorry, I shouldn't say Indians. The native the indigenous people of that island's folklore. They're called the Taino people, more so, whereas other parts of the Caribbean, it's much more West African folklore that has been brought over. So, I mean, I'm sure there are some particularly horrifying and terrifying things there, but this just seemed to be in the sweet spot of infanticide and giant owl-headed women. And I have to say, guys, not for me.
Yeah, that's not on your Tinder profile.
No, absolutely not.
WLTM, so, barn owl with a hemo. It would taste for hemoglobin.
As well, because like owls, I always think, you know, owls mean wisdom. But I guess, again, that whole thing of what an owl means around.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that if you're a vole. Our choices for the world's worst old wives' tale this week are Barry's classic World War II tale of night vision carrots, Juliet's childhood experience of being told eat up your crusts to keep your hair curly as some sort of strange coiffure workout, or mine, Dominican Republic horror story of bird-faced women feasting on the blood of infants. Guys, sometimes this is a difficult choice, and other times I bring a horrifying Caribbean mythological beast that enjoys its own little childhood black pudding, and that knocks your hairy crusts and carrots into a cocked hat. So, I don't always like to choose myself, and I think together what we have formed is some sort of disgusting mythological tapas involving carrots, hairy crusts, and the blood of newborns. But mine is absolutely the congealed cherry on top of that disgusting ice cream sundae.
Very, very good.
Before we go, it's time for the best news of the week that we shall keep filling your ears with until the end of this damned plague. And
of course that news is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be the next president and vice president of the United States of America.
Yes. America didn't choose a president the way Ben just chose a winner.
Yes. Yeah. The results of this podcast are pending an appeal at the Supreme Court.
And actually, and also the best news of the week is that Joe Biden has actually made Mitch McConnell illegal. Constitutionally, and even better than that, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been knocking on the lid of her coffin and come out and gone, I was actually fine all along, psych, I'm getting back on the Supreme Court. There was someone who I follow on Twitter, I can't remember who, said, listen, the writers of 2020 have been getting a bit carried away, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying on the eve of Rosh Hashanah as civil unrest fills the streets feels a little on the fucking nose, guys.
I'm so here for zombie Bader Ginsburg, though.
Great.
Yes.
Let's write that screenplay.
Absolutely. Yeah, and she drags Amy Barrett to hell where she fucking belongs. Anyway, happy news, happy news, happy news. This news comes to you from Leeds in Yorkshire, where a gentleman, Sven Kirby, who adopted two pet geese during lockdown, has begun taking them to the local pub. The pub have insisted that the two birds, named Norbert and Beep Beep, when...
I insist that you take that again while trying to read it like a straight-faced BBC newsreader. And finally.
I'm struggling with our owner's name, to be honest. And finally, a gentleman from Leeds in Yorkshire named Sven Birkby. No, that's not his name. Named Sven Kirby. Look, I'm trying to both A, deliver this, and B, work out how the fuck the edit's going to work on this.
I'm going to mute myself. Yeah.
I insist he gets through this. This may be the last episode that ever goes out if the internet gets shut down by President Biden / Trump, so, you know.
Our best news of the week comes from Leeds in Yorkshire, where a gentleman named Sven Kirby has adopted two geese named Norbert and Beep Beep, and he has been allowed to take them to his local pub on the proviso that Norbert and Beep Beep wear nappies at all times. When asked about it, Sven said, Sven, who lives on his own, too fucking right he does, having two nappyless geese wandering around his house. I know a goose is a strange pet, but it's something different that I've wanted for a while. I could have got a dog, but as I work full time, I didn't think that was very fair. Geese require much less attention, not when they've been on the lash in a pub for an evening, mate.
Oh my god, Norbert and Beep Beep.
Yeah, just glorious. So our very best wishes to that wonderful threesome. Before we go, Juliet, where can our listeners find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Well, because of these strange times, you can mostly find me on Twitter or Instagram. And my Twitter is at Juliet Myers, which is JULIETMEYERS. Look out for me doing the show with Homer in the near future.
Smashing stuff. Where we're all off to our nearest artisanal hipster cafe to try and pitch them hairy crusts with carrot pate and regurgitated Bruja blood on top. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, goodbye from them, and hello 2021 and a little bit of common sense.
Hey.